plug and pray technology. And sometimes you have to pray that the plugin actually works. Now what you see in this answer is there is a marker here, backslash RR, that is not defined in Tech Explorer. So it tells you in red that it doesn't know this particular marker. And what happens to you when you view your first document with this Tech Explorer, you will see lots of red markers because its knowledge actually at this moment is quite limited in terms of tech. So, by the way, the other thing I tried is I tried HTML. Where do I have it? Here. This is how much the HTML 3.1 knows about mathematics. It looks all right at the beginning, and then it gets bad. And you will see where it actually fails. So this is a fraction typeset as a table. I don't even want to show you the source. It's completely unreadable in terms of when you have to produce it. That would be okay. But you see, here we get to the real deficiency. The HTML standard does not know about any Greek character or any mathematical symbol. So there is a gap. So what I would say is the browsers are extremely good in understanding images, in understanding pictures. They're fairly good in understanding sound. Actually, the sound is quite primitive still with browsers, and they're completely ignorant about mathematics. I don't know why that is. My colleagues at IBM tell me there's no market for it. In fact, all the publishers of mathematical texts now are involved in one or the other project, because this is obviously the way that future documents will be presented. There is an alternative, which I also want to show you, and which you may have seen in today's first lecture, which is, of course, the way that mathematics should be presented to a user nowadays. The mathematics should be active. I click on it, and hopefully it will seamlessly integrate. So this just fires up the Maple symbolic mathematical program. The difference between this document and the other documents you have seen before is that the mathematics actually is active. And I'm sure everyone likes to play with it. For example, you can go down here and you can actually compute the solution of solution of the quadratic. So if I didn't typeset it right, I actually can Maple have compute the solution for me. So this is active mathematics. So you can also embed graphics. There is even some hyperlink capability here now in the new Maple, where you can have a link to a help page or a link to another worksheet of yours. So this all looks perfect, but it has exactly the deficiency that I've mentioned before. It's a closed system solution. In other words, Waterloo Maple software tries to reinvent the internet browser, and with everything that is a copy, copies usually are not so good. So this is, in my opinion, somewhat the wrong direction to go to enhance Maple so that in the end it looks like HTML, because there is a lot of effort and technology being put into these internet browsers, and they never have the manpower actually to keep up with it. So, as they say, if you can't beat them, you have to join them. I asked the Waterloo Maple company whether they provide a plugin to view their worksheets, and they said they are not interested in this product because, of course, for you to view a Maple worksheet, you should have to buy Maple. It shouldn't come for free on your computer. As I say, it's a great solution in terms of doing mathematics, but it's not a good solution in providing mathematics for for internet users out there to download and to work with. So let me go back, and if I can find my cursor again, I have to close this. I actually can exit Maple. So what is going to happen in the future? If you're a practicing mathematician or a scientist who needs to incorporate mathematics in the internet homepages, you're actually currently facing a problem. I would say that the current state of affairs is that the internet browser technology does not provide you with enough technology to do it conveniently and to do it properly. So you may not know, and I'm going to click on the link. I clicked on the link before so that it's in cache. The new features of internet browsers are decided is that the World Wide Web has a selection of committees looking into different aspects of internet content, like movies. There's a committee that looks at how the formats, how the standardized formats of movies should look like. There's a committee for sound, and there's a committee for foreign script, and of course there is a committee for mathematics. This committee will actually meet in 2 weeks at IBM up in New York, and they have a draft language. They call it MathML, and I actually tried to show you how it will look, how we will write MathML. I have to scroll down here. Somewhere there's a square root here. There is a formula. So this is pretty discouraging. If you look at this document, x plus 2 squared, there is how you're going to write it in HTML so that the browser understands it. So what's going on here? Why is this so complicated? Why don't they just allow TeX or LaTeX format as input? And I've actually spoken with this committee at length about it, and the reason is that the idea of mathematics in an HTML document is so that, first of all, it has to scale. If you change the size of the document, the formulas actually should stretch out. Maybe a broken formula should be set on a single line. And the second thing is you're supposed to be able to select sub-formulas and drag and drop them, say, into a Maple document. So these mathematical formulas that you will have in documents actually should be able to make them active by importing them into a true symbolic mathematics application. And this is why this is so complicated. Now, are you going to write your documents with it? Of course not. So the idea here is, and I've indicated this also, that the Tech Explorer software that I have shown you before will be converted to an authoring system for mathematics. So what you will actually be doing is you will have a formula editor that the Tech Explorer spins off, and you will be able, with templates, typeset your mathematics, and then Tech Explorer will implant these complicated expressions into your document. So there is another committee, and I actually should tell you that this project has a large sum of funding in Europe. It's a $6 million project in Europe, OpenMath, and what OpenMath is supposed to do, it's a standard committee to describe a standard of how mathematical objects are going to be expressed and transmitted over the internet. The reason why the Europeans are so interested in OpenMath, and actually the European Union has put $6 million into this project, is that the Europeans have a sense that all the standards on the internet are made in America. And in fact, maybe mathematics is the only standard that we have not set. And so they have a hope that their companies like Springer Verlag and like the Numeric Algorithms Group in Oxford in England will, by European setting the standards for mathematics, have an edge on having products out first. Now, there will be an open math meeting in 2 weeks also at IBM. Those two meetings are together. And I expect at that meeting that the standards committee will actually split into an American part and a European part. So the idea here is, and MathML is the markup language, and OpenMath is actually the representation with which, say, Maple will communicate with the internet's documents. Drag-and-drop applications, I've told you, the state of affairs is that I'm giving this talk perhaps a year too early. It's not done yet. The standard isn't decided yet. The Maple isn't running yet to be able to import an open math formatted mathematical object, but I'm convinced this will happen. In the meantime, of course, we have to make do with what we have, and I actually think that Deck Explorer is a good product to put on your computer, because that piece of software will ultimately support the mathematics standard that the W3C committee has voted into existence. That's it. This whole project is supported by Project 25. I'm doing a course now, and we are just doing it in Maple because it's a local course, but I'm always a little uneasy about having students go to when they ask me, how can I view these documents? I tell them you have to buy 100 pieces of software to do it on your own computer. When they have all the browsers and all the plugins at their disposal for everything else, for movies, for sound, and it's all free. So, are there any questions? Yes. This is an excellent question. This open math project exists for 8 years. You're absolutely right. And the reason why I think that it's going to happen now is, first of all, now there's real money in it. But there's another reason. Actually, one only needs two companies to agree on it, and then it will happen. Wolfram Research Inc. and Waterloo Maple Software. If the two agree on the standard, then I take it that the standard will actually be adopted by everyone else. And right now, the committee consists of Waterloo Maple Software representation and of Wolfram Research Inc. representation. So Neil Seufer is on the committee. I know that Wolfram Research Inc. has its own MathLink standard, and they're a little reluctant to actually convert to a standard that other products also can support. But I think it will happen because, as I say, there is also now the interest of publishers, of the AMS, of Springer Verlag, of Edison Wesley, and they have a slightly different agenda. So they really want to get things out. They don't want to sell software. So with them participating in these committees, I think it will happen. I'm on the North American committee. I'll try my best to have it happen. Yes. Are there any further questions?
I assume that as part of this, there would be some kind of LaTeX to MathML.
Okay, so Deck Explorer, what Deck Explorer does, the Deck Explorer plugin will take your LaTeX and view it. And of course, what IBM hopes is once MathML, the markup language for mathematics, is adopted by the people who build browsers, by Netscape, by Microsoft, that they, instead of displaying the mathematics the way Deck Explorer does now, that they instead convert it to MathML. So it's a good bet. The only thing I don't know is whether Netscape or Microsoft have it on their agenda to boot MathML into their browsers. They are represented on the committee, but mathematics isn't the highest priority item. Actually, the highest priority item for them is animation. So, nonetheless, with the publishers being interested in it, there is more pressure on them now. Are there any further questions? Any other questions? Okay, I switch off my record. See the inverse matrix, and I have to somehow denote the first column. So the way I'm going to write this is that the first column keeps the row index arbitrary, and it fixes the column index. So I write it A inverse star 1 up to A inverse star n, so each column, so that's actually very nice, this is where we ended up last time. So these columns are what we want. We want the columns of the inverse matrix, and this A actually distributes over the columns, because this is how a product is done. You chase across A, and you chase down the columns of the right-hand side factor. So this looks like I can write this A times the inverse first column, A times the inverse last column, and this I want to be IN. So now we know how we get the ith column of the inverse. A times A inverse, the ith column of the inverse has to be equal the ith column of the identity matrix, which is 0, 0, 1, 0, where you have a 1 in the ith position here. And this is the ith row here, and this vector is actually denoted sometimes by E sub I. So this is the ith unit vector in N space. So this column now is our unknown, and we are resolved to compute the inverse by just solving a bunch of linear equations. And I just want to show you that this really works here. So we took B here, and we wanted to invert it. So let's get this. Oh, you don't see it. I see it. I have to switch it off here. Now you see it also. So the last column here, we want to get the last column. So the first thing we have to do, we're going to use Linsolve. So Linsolve, solves a linear system, and I give it a matrix and a vector, and I get back the solution vector. So all I have to do is Linsolve B, and now I want the last column of the inverse, so I have to give it a vector, and the vector is 0, 0, 1. This is the third unit vector, so this is a vector, it's the last column of the identity matrix. And let's just see what happens when I type this in. Maple grasses. Fortune cookies are printed. No. So, lo and behold, this is the last column of our inverse matrix. But that's what it's supposed to be. This is how one could compute the inverse. You could so the middle column. Let's do all three of them. Lenzhol's B vector, and I'm going to do it in reverse order, which is kind of stupid. That's the middle column, and Lenzhol's B vector 1, 0, 0, and that's the first column. So if I scroll back, these are indeed the columns of the inverse. So if I were to ask you now, under the threat of flunking you in this class, I used to say under the threat of shooting you on the spot, but this could be misinterpreted as a threat, as a bodily, it's a joke, it's not, I never mean to kill anyone, but I also don't mean to flunk you, but even if you misinterpret it, I still can sort of weasel my way out and say, this is a pedagogical device. Anyway, if I were to ask you under the threat of flunking you in this course to compute the inverse of a 4x4 matrix, what would you do? You would solve four linear systems. You would just exchange the right-hand side. Solve four linear systems for each column in the inverse. But actually, you don't need to solve four. You only need to solve one. You can do the system simultaneously. And actually, we already somewhat know this, because how do you solve a linear system? Well, you compute the row echelon form of the coefficient matrix and then do a back substitution with different right-hand sides. You see, you do a forward, a row echelon form computation of the coefficient matrix, and I just write it out here. I just draw a little picture. So there are going to be not just one right-hand side, there are going to be n right-hand sides. Those are the unit vectors. Those are the right-hand sides, and there is the coefficient matrix. And this, you do a row echelon form construction, and since it's an invertible matrix, you get the perfect Sciacca-Sciacca case. There cannot be any free variables, because if there were free variables, you would have more than one inverse. And the inverse is uniquely determined. There are not two inverse matrices. There's just one inverse matrix. You get a Sciacca case here, and then you get the different right-hand sides, the one that were produced from these n unit vectors, and then you do the back substitution for each of them. So actually, even now, you already see that the solution of n linear systems, where the left-hand side coefficient matrix doesn't change, saves you some work. You do the row echelon form computation only once. And then you do the backward substitution. But this is still a stupid way of doing it. And we'll learn a much sleeker way of doing it in a second. So now we are going to go to elementary matrices. This is actually on the syllabus today. We are going to talk about... you already peeled off some. We are going to talk about elementary matrices. These are special matrices. Now, this used to be a burdensome topic in teaching. I always had troubles teaching it because they are very difficult to visualize, these elementary matrices. But now, actually, they live up to their name. It's truly elementary, because I can just use Maple and show you what they do. And once you see them in action, you know what they're all about. So I'm not going to write them down here. I'm just going to load in my package here. And where did you start up Maple from, Benjamin? From my home directory?
Yeah.
So I have to give the full path name, which I'm going to... First of all, I have to click on the right icon here. So... that's the initlib. I'm going to do it with the library, so I'm just going to load my library. I'm just going to do a read. This path name now is in the worksheet, so you don't have to figure it out. You just pop up the worksheet. Maple initlib.mpl. So let's read in the library. And now we can do with ref package, actually it is called. And there they are. E sub 1. So this is the first, this is what is going to be referred to as an elementary matrix of the first kind. The help page, unfortunately, is not blown up. So we are just going to see them in action. But you can see there are these elementary matrices of three kinds. And let's just... which dimension do you want me to work with? 4x4 or 5x5? 4x4 is easier to understand than 5x5? Yes? Okay, we'll work with 4x4 matrices. So, A, let me see, is A still the generic 4x4 matrix? No. So I have to make a generic 4x4 matrix. A is such a nice name for a matrix. C is a nice name for a computer language. Do you know why they call it C while I type this in? Came after B. Is that, that's the answer? BCPL means basic? Programming... Basic Computer Programming Language. That's BCPL. B stands for basic. C stands for? After B. All right. You're right and you're wrong in some ways. There's a controversy. The way I know it is C stands for common. Common. But you're partially right. Actually, they had an A language, a B language, and a C language. All right. So there is my C matrix. And now I'm going to make an elementary matrix of the first kind. E sub 1, E underscore I, capital I, so this is the first kind. I have to give it a dimension, and the dimension has to be the same as this matrix is. And I have to give it two indices in the row range and in the column range. So two indices, please. Hello? Two indices? Maybe we should use the random number generator. Okay, 3-1. Here it is. So now this matrix is funnily looking, but if you look at it very carefully, it's very... Maybe we do another one so that you get the construction rule, E sub I, 4x4, and two other subscripts. So there's not much that I can choose, maybe 2-3. Okay, does anyone see how this matrix is constructed? Can you tell me the rule? Yes? Yes, what's the construction rule? It's a 4x4 matrix. It has ones on the diagonal, except in two places. I should have done a bigger one. You see, 5 by 5 is perhaps a little bit better. E sub I, 5 by 5, 2, 4. Oh, now it's crystal clear what happens here. Yes? You start out with an identity matrix, a 5 by 5 identity matrix, and the two indices that I give you, 2 and 4, 2 and 3, 3 and 1, those will be 2 row and 2 column indices, and you essentially displace the one on the diagonal into the corners of that square. So you move the one that was up there in the second row down to the fourth row, and you move the one that was in the fourth row up to the second row. That's how you displace them. So let's do one more. I mean, let's do a 5 by 5, 1 and 5, and oh yeah. You see, the one gets displaced in row 1 and row 5, and it gets displaced exactly into the other row. So the one from row 1 is placed into row 5, and the one from row 5 is placed into row 1. Clear? Clear? Yes? Yes, okay. Now, what happens when I take an elementary matrix and I multiply it in? So, a vowel M, so it has to be a 4x4 matrix to use with our C matrix. So I take an elementary matrix of the first kind, 4x4, and we had 1 and 2, or 1 and 3, I forgot, 1 and 3, times C. Excuse me? Unfortunately, your clever remark, which was absolutely right, is not on the tape. I don't record it. Swap the first and the third row, and on the other side? Anyone has guesses now? Swap the columns. So when you multiply an elementary matrix of the first kind from the left into a matrix, you do a row exchange. From the right, you do a column exchange. And you can say you have seen it here in Math 3 or 5. I'm too much influenced by television. I don't know. Okay, now... If you don't believe me, we do another example. Elementary matrix of the first kind, 4x4, 1, 4, times C, exchanges row 1 and row 4. So this is an elementary row operation of the first kind.